Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
All right. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets. It's got the latest Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program a very good friend of the show. You know him from his work on RDS, on TSN, and on MSG. He's our good friend, Marty Biron. Marty, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing after beating up on my Sabres last night?
you know, Marty, we've obviously spent a lot of the first 90 minutes or so of the show talking about last night's game. And I was impressed with the Buffalo Sabres in that I thought they played a better game than I expected from them. I thought they played, they deserved a better fate last night, but push comes to shove. They just didn't get the goaltending necessary to win at an NHL level. Your comment, you agree, you disagree with my comment.
You know what, it's been a tough season for Chad Johnson. He's only got one win, and he's not playing badly, but he's not, you know, blowing it out of the water. And what happens is a situation like last night where you say, okay, well, you know, the Bufflin shot, there was definitely some a screen in front. You know, the Wheeler shot, there was a screen in front by Perreault, I believe. You know, he made a nice save on Ehlers. But then there's, the goal at the end of the first period that made it 2-1 where it's a point shot from Trouba. There's really nobody in front of him other than Scandella, which I don't know why he was standing in front of his goalie instead of trying to box out Marco Dano on the side of the net there. But still, this is one of those where you should be able to look around and fight to see the puck. I don't think he was fighting the puck, but he was definitely fighting to try to see the puck, which makes it a tough situation for the goalie.
Marty, sticking with the Buffalo Sabres, in your opinion, is this a team that's better than the record indicates?
No, I don't think so. I think that they are exactly what the record indicates. They have struggled to generate offense at times. They have struggled to play with speed. And really, if you think of the players that they have on that team with the Jack Eichel and Evander Kane, they've got speed, but the rest of the team is not built really for a ton of speed. Ryan O'Reilly is not a speedster. Kalik Posto is not a speedster. Sam Reinhart doesn't have much speed. They want to play quick. They want to play fast, but I think they're a very slow team. I looked at the game last night. Every time Winnipeg had the puck, they went fast. They went up the ice. They tried to stress the Sabres. Their Ds were active. They play a quick game. The Sabres kind of slow things down. They try to do the long regroup. They go D to D, and then they go back to the D partner, and then if they don't have anything, they go back to their D partner. They slow the game down. I think Phil Housley's been talking about playing fast, playing with pace, like the Nashville Predators did last year when he was an assistant coach there. But it's just, I don't think they have the personnel to play the speed game that he wants them to play, and they've been struggling with that.
You know, Marty, here in Winnipeg, we're seeing the benefit of having a strong AHL farm club in the Manitoba Moose. With the Buffalo Sabres, last year the Rochester Americans were sixth, I believe, in the North Division. Now they're up to second. They only have 8 regulation losses. How important is that for this organization to now be able to say that they've got some depth coming up from the AHL? If they do, I don't know that much about the Americans, but because we don't see them here in Winnipeg. But are they going to be able to say in the next couple of years that they have a crop of young guys coming up through the organization?
Well, they're hoping, and it starts with Brendan Gooley on defense. A fantastic prospect for the Buffalo Sabres. He scored a game-winning goal in overtime last night. You talk about speed, this guy has a lot of speed. So the Sabres are doing the right thing right now. They're keeping him in Rochester. They're not going to call him up. They've got bodies. They've got 7 defensemen in Buffalo. They don't need him to come up and stop his development. So they've got him in Rochester, which is good. They've got a good goalie in Linus Hallmark. But I think that's what GM, first-year GM Jason Botterill is trying to build. You look at the Pittsburgh Penguins when he worked there. They had a really strong Wilkes-Barre Scranton team. It helped getting the guys like Jake Gensel and Brian Rust, and you know those are key players in the back-to-back Stanley Cups for Pittsburgh. And I think Botterill is trying to do that in Rochester this year. C.J. Smith was a good college free agent that they've got. His first-year pro, he's leading the team in scoring. He's going to the All-Star game. You've got veterans that were signed to help the young guys in Rochester. I think that's where it starts. So the Sabres are not really showing anything on the ice, and I think if you're a Buffalo Sabres fan right now, you want to look at their farm team. You want to look at their prospects. Casey Mittelstadt with Team USA at the World Juniors, he was the MVP of the tournament. He was fantastic. He could easily be in Buffalo next year. I don't know if he'll be, but he could. Alex Nylander is another prospect with Team Sweden. There was a lot a good young prospect coming up, but they've got to figure out what direction they're going to move in with the big club.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him as an analyst for MSG, where he covers the Sabres. You also see him on NHL and RDS. Marty, one last Sabres question for you. Of course, the Jets and the Sabres, the rematch will be Tuesday. Robin Lehner, the number one goaltender for the Sabres, he's an RFA at season's end. Do the Sabres have a number one? Is he a bona fide NHL number one goaltender, or do the Sabres need to be looking for improvement in goal going into next year?
Well, he's the only reason the Sabres have had success over the last month, really 5 weeks. He's played really, really well. He's really good at home. As you probably will see on Tuesday when Winnipeg comes into Buffalo, I would expect Robin Lehner is going to be in net for that one. Bearing anything crazy happening tomorrow against Philly, but he's been really good at home. Robin has done a good job simplifying his game this year. He's still a little bit on the crazier side when it comes to diving around and throwing a two-pass stack once in a while and being a battler in net. And I like the more structured goaltenders. I like Connor Hellebuyck the way that he's always seems to be under control and in good position. I like the Braden Holtby of this world. You know, that's my cup of tea when it comes to goaltenders. So, yeah, do I think Robin Lehner is the direction the Sabres want to go with in the future? No. But it could be a great opportunity for the Sabres to trade him at the deadline and get something good in return, because there's going to be a couple of teams. The Islanders is one of them. They may be looking for a goaltender to solidify their playoff run, and I think he's better than a lot of starting goalies around the league, but he wouldn't be the goalie that I would build my franchise around.
Marty, we want to ask you about a goaltender who is a prospect for a team who you used to play for, and that, of course, is Carter Hart, a second-rounder of the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, what did you think of his performance at the World Juniors after having a disappointing gold medal game last year against the Americans?
Well, he had a disappointing tournament last year. If you look at it, it was up and down for Carter Hart. He was given every opportunity to perform and perform well, and it didn't work. And then they lose to the U.S. in the finals. And but you got to give the kid a credit for how strong mentally he's been, and he's putting a crazy campaign now in juniors. And I think he's quirky. Listen, the whole superstitions. He's eaten the same breakfast for the last 4 years. I read in an article it's three eggs and toast, and it's always the same thing. Him wanting to stay on the ice until everybody's off the ice at the end of the period, that's very quirky as well. But he takes it with a smile, and he's having fun with it, which I think is why he's having so much success. Now he's got to be careful, because I've seen a lot of players where their superstitions take over and it doesn't become fun anymore. It becomes like do or die if I don't do certain things. He just seems to be having a lot of fun with it, which is great. I hope he keeps that in the back of his mind and can take that to the pros next year when he makes the transition from juniors into the Flyers organization. But I think this year, obviously, he was the player of the game in the gold medal, and I think Sweden really threw a lot of different looks at him, and he was able to respond. But there's there's a change. It's like, and I don't know if it's more technical or physical, but I think there's a mental change in the way you look at Carter Hart this year. And he's got the biggest smile on his face after every game, which tells me that he's playing a lot looser this year, and the Flyers should be really happy about that.
Marty, here in Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuyck is having a career year. He's on pace to probably play about 68 games this season. What do you think an ideal number is for a goaltender to play in an NHL season? And I know I'm asking you that having played, you played 72 games for the Sabres in 2001, 2002. So I know you have seen a heavy workload before.
Not too shabby.
No, and yeah, but that wasn't on the schedule that was supposed to happen. My first full year as a starter with Buffalo playing 72 games, that's not ideal. I loved it, but that's not ideal when you look at the amount of work you have to put, and we were having a tough season as well, so that's not good. I think 60 to 65 games is the ideal. Listen, the 1 year with the New York Rangers, my second season with the Rangers, Henrik Lundqvist played 62. I played 20. There's your 82 games. None of us got pulled at any point in the season because of performance. I went in for Hank in the third period of a game early in the season because his skates were hurting him, which was funny. And if you look at the stats, that's why I think he it doesn't add up. But all 82 game was a 62-20 split. Basically, he played three, I played one. He played three, I played one. There were stretches where he played more. He played four or five in a row. But there was a couple times where I played, not on back-to-back, but two out of three games, depending on the schedule. And I think that would be the ideal stretch for Connor Hellebuyck, play 60 to 65 games. I think he's, you know, on pace for 40 wins this year. 40 wins is a great accomplishment. So you've got to really look at your schedule, your travel, what position you're in, what you're fighting for when it comes down to the last 10, 15 games. And then you adjust. Maybe he plays 68 games because he's got to play the last 9 or 10 games of the season to finish first in the division or to get home ice advantage. Maybe he doesn't, and then you give him a rest. So I think you identify your need by that point. But obviously, he's a big reason for their success. And, he's going to play because they want to be – and if I was Winnipeg, I'd want to be first in that division. I'd want to – be able to say I've got home ice for the first two rounds, and if you can overtake Vegas in the Western Conference, then you've got home ice for all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. That would be pretty sweet.
Marty, last question for you, and we always appreciate your time. The Carolina Hurricanes are now in the second wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Yet Scott Darling, the goaltender who they brought over from the Blackhawks to be their number one this year, has struggled throughout pretty much the entire season. Cam Ward is having a renaissance, but Scott Darling is struggling. Are you surprised that Scott Darling is having so many struggles in his first extended look as a number one goaltender?
I'm surprised because he's worked with goaltender coach Mike Bilsby before, and that's Bilsby was in Pittsburgh for the last few years and now is in Carolina, and I thought that was going to be a good fit for Scott Darling. Those two knew each other. But when I look at the way Darling is playing, I find it that he seems lost in the net. I mean, we've seen that goal where he tried to catch it across his body and that went in. That was from the neutral zone. I find it that he's lost in the net. He's lost his mojo that he had in Chicago. And maybe that's, Bill Peters is a tough coach for goaltenders. We saw how Eddie Lack had issues in Carolina the last few years, even Cam Ward. So maybe Darling is feeling that. Joel Quenneville is very easy on his players and on his goaltenders. He just lets them do whatever they want. And, maybe that was the situation Darling was in Chicago, and it's completely different in Carolina. So I am surprised, and I'm surprised to see that Carolina is still hanging in there. Man, that Metropolitan Division is tough. You got, six teams could really be in the top three in that division at any given moment. Pittsburgh is still not a factor in there. So I'm surprised that they're able to stay alive, even though Darling is struggling.
Marty Biron is an analyst with MSG, with TSN, with RDS. Marty, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Marty. When we come back, we look at the Jets' defense at the 41-game mark. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
plays it. Armia for Little. Little back up for Nikolai Ehlers. Quickly to Myers. Quickly to the net. Scores! Puck movement onto the stick of Tyler Myers and to the back of the net. And another power play goal for the Winnipeg Jets.
Tyler Myers scoring for the Winnipeg Jets, a key contributor on the Jets' back end through 41-42 games played here in this 2017-18 NHL season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch the game, perhaps you're looking for a place to watch tomorrow afternoon's game, Bernstein's Deli has you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got food and drink specials. It's hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's. For more information, bernsteinsdeli.com. Tyler Myers, guys, to me, has been one of the catalysts to the improved Jets defense. I mean, obviously, last year was such a lost season for Tyler, where he barely was a member of the Winnipeg Jets because of the injury. What you're seeing from Tyler Myers this year, a confident player who, and his contributions to this Jets defense, I don't think can be overrated. How would you evaluate the Jets defense as we're at the halfway point of the season?
Well, I don't know about a grade, but for me, it's been much improved from last year. And yeah, sure, Drew, you know, you could start with Tyler Myers, who only played 11 games last year. And, you know, he's been a big rock back there on defense for the Jets. And, you know, Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba have been an excellent top pair. And I think you have to mention Dmitry Kulikov. And I've been very pleasantly surprised with Dmitry Kulikov, who's been paired up with Tyler Myers for much of the season. And, you know, he was a guy that, you know, I think we all agreed, you know, maybe the Jets gave him a little bit too much money. But, you know, take that out of the equation, because I don't think you can always just associate a player, you know, with a price tag.
Sure.
But Kulikov has been really good. And it's not just defensively, but he's contributed offensively as well. But, I mean, Kulikov can skate. I mean, we know that. He's a former first-round pick. He can move the puck. But, you know, he has a physical element to his game that I don't think many people knew that he had. But he's just been a steadying influence and a good complement to Tyler Myers. So I think, you know, that second pair, if you want to call it a second pair of Kulikov and Myers, because I think we'd all agree that Morrissey and Trouba has been the shutdown pair.
Sure.
And then whoever has been out there with Dustin Byfuglien, whether that's Toby Enstrom, whether that's Ben Sherratt, or you've had, you know, Tucker Pullman in the lineup a little bit for the Jets as well when Buff was out. But, you know, as a group, I think that the Jets have finally found their identity defensively, and they've realized that they all have a role. And, you know, Jacob Trouba, I think, you know, there are a lot of fans out there that look at Trouba and they say, well, he's in a contract year and he's not making himself a lot of money. But, you know, he's been pretty solid defensively, and he's had, you know, his bad games, you know, mixed in there with his good games. But I think as a group, they've been much better in their own zone, much more structured. Mm-hmm. They move the puck quicker out of their own zone than they did last year. And I think that they finally bought in, you know, to Paul Maurice's system. And I think that, you know, took a little bit of time. I think last year at time the Jets looked lost in their own zone. You forget last year, you know, that the Jets were a complete mess on special teams and a complete mess in their own zone. And this year, I think the Jets have, you know, finally adapted to that system, because it took a while. And this year we know that Paul Maurice has tweaked his system along with the coaching staff to play a little bit more of a passive you know, style on the penalty kill especially, but also at times in their own zone, especially in the early part of the season when the Jets weren't generating enough offensively. So, you know, for the most part, I would have to give the Jets a really good grade, whether that's a B+, whether that's an A, because they're just simply playing better in their own zone. And, you know, it's great to see, because, you know, Josh Morrissey, I think, has been the Jets' best defenseman since the beginning of the season. But I think you can say, you know, good things about all Jets defensemen, including Buff. And I realize Buff just scored his first goal of the game, but I think he's been much better defensively. And I think that's what we wanted to see, because we know the goals will come.
Dave, you know, as you mentioned Byfuglien, is Byfuglien the Jets defenseman that you think has more to give in the second half of the season? You know, obviously only the one goal, which he got last night. But is he the defenseman that can sort of step up his game even further in the second half of the year?
Yeah, I think so because, I think Trouba still has more to give, and I think he and Josh Morrissey have been a phenomenal pairing, and I think Josh Morrissey's probably, in my mind, been the standout defenseman for this Jets team. He's going to hit career highs in goals and assists soon. He'll surpass his points total. He's almost done that in half the number of games as he did it last year. So Josh Morrissey, to me, if you're asking about the Jets defenseman, in an individual instance, I think he's been probably the best Jets defenseman. As he touched on it, I think Kulikov has been – he really started off slowly, I thought. Mm-hmm. But I think he's kind of really formed a nice partnership with Tyler Myers. Tyler Myers, again, another player who's had an important season for Winnipeg. Dustin Byfuglien's doing – Coach Bruce talked about it a little bit. He's making a little bit of fewer chancier plays. And I think that's probably more important than the offense and scoring the goals, because the truth is this team doesn't really need the defense to score as many goals simply because they can get it from the forwards. Now, that's not to say, as last night was an example, that getting scoring from the back end isn't important. It is, obviously, but I'm just saying that if you're a coach, you think it's much more important, I think, to play structurally well than to be taking chances and going on those odd man rushes.
You don't have to give it up in the defensive zone.
Right, of course.
As
you don't
readily
want to be seeing the forward as the defenseman, which we see occasionally, but not nearly as often as we used to when this team would have a player like Dustin Byfuglien who would rove a little bit and would be up in the, you know, with the play and stuff. So Byfuglien, of course he's got more to give. I think everybody has more to give. I think if you want to pick apart individual games, you can do that. But if you're taking the sum of all parts and the totality of this team so far, through 42 games, I think so far this Jets defensive core has been at least a B-plus in my mind.
And Dave, if you look at the Jets defense this year from last year, I mean, I think you could really break it down to last year the Jets had Mark Stewart and Paul Postma in their top eight, mm-hmm. and now they have Dmitry Kulikov and Tucker Pullman. And that's a big upgrade. And I realize Tucker Pullman's a rookie,
right.
But when he's gone into the lineup, he's looked good. He's looked really solid. And, you know, with Buff obviously back in the lineup now, Tucker Pullman, is not in the top six. But I think it's clear that, Tucker Pullman can play at the NHL level, even though he's only 24.
I think, and again, it's still a long season. There's still a ways to go. But, I mean, the reality is I had no expectation Nelson Noje would be playing for the Winnipeg Jets last year. Whereas, right now...
When he did play for the Jets last year.
Right, and yeah. What I'm getting at is, there was no expectation because we saw so many injuries on the Jets back end. Now, so far, they've been able to weather the storm, and if mm-hmm. they need to, they call Julian Melchiori up from the American Hockey League. But the reality is, they've got Pullman, they've got Melchiori, they've got a guy like Cam Schilling, if they need to, who's just named an AHL All-Star for the Moose. The fact is, they've got... And, I mean, of course, Sammy Niku, although I don't want to talk about him because I think he's probably someone who's best served where he is.
Yeah.
The truth is that there's a nice depth from within the organization if they need to draw upon it. But right now, with the players that they have in front of them, and especially with the cold tending they're getting from Connor Hellebuck, this group's look good.
When your eighth defenseman is Tucker Pullman, I mean, seventh, eighth, Sherratt, Pullman, whatever you want to say, you're in a better position. I mentioned Myers off the start. What stood out to me about Myers' game recently is that he's playing with so much confidence that the physical side to his game, which isn't a big element of his game, is, I think, beginning to come out a little bit more. He's becoming more physical, and you think a guy of Myers' size would always be physical, but that's certainly not the case typically. But you see him playing now, and watch for it, that he's getting more involved physically when it never used to be a part of his game at all. So when you combine, 6'8" or however tall he actually is, along with the more of a physical side, it really shows to me a player who's playing with the confidence that you haven't really seen since maybe his Calder Trophy winning season or that first stint he had with the Jets when he came over from Buffalo in the trade a few years ago when he had that great stretch when he came over initially. So that's something just to keep an eye on over the last, I think, 40 games or so of the season.
Yeah, Drew, that's a fair comment. And, he's playing 23, 24, 25 minutes a night. And he started off the season a little bit slow, but, night in, night out, Paul Maurice can depend on Tyler Myers, whether that's at 5-on-5, whether that's on the penalty kill, whether that's on the second power play unit, because he doesn't play normally on the first power play unit, but he's been a rock, as I mentioned, for this Jets defense, and, that's what they envisioned when they traded for him, right, mm-hmm. a couple years back. So, it's great to see, because last year, certainly didn't work out the way he wanted with the injuries and everything like that. So, it's been great to see. He's been excellent this year.
The San Jose Sharks are into Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon to play the Jets. Zachary Devine covers the Sharks for TheAthletic.com in the Bay Area. Zachary joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. If it's Saturday morning, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from TheAthletic.com in the Bay Area. He covers the San Jose Sharks. Pleased to welcome back Zachary Devine. Zachary, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you all today?
Very well, Zach. How about yourself?
Good, thank you.
That's good.
By the way, Zach, I was texting you while I was in San Francisco. That earthquake, that scared me a little bit, but you said that you slept through it.
Yeah, my wife told me about it that morning. You know, I've lived in the Bay Area my whole life, so it takes a little bit. I heard it was a pretty good jolt, though. It was over there located in Berkeley, so pretty near you up there in San Francisco. So welcome to California.
Yeah, apparently that was California's way of trying to get rid of Ezzy, is have an earthquake to send him home as quickly as possible. And frankly, Winnipeg completely understands, and if we were on a fault line, we would use that as well. Zach, obviously brought you on to talk about the Sharks. A disappointing result last night for the Sharks in Ottawa, really, where they had a game well in hand, only to lose it 6-5 in overtime to the Ottawa Senators, and a desperate Ottawa Senators. But, you know, the Sharks right now, they're sort of just in the muddy middle of the Western Conference. They got the Anaheim Ducks nipping at their heels, only a point behind. So the Sharks aren't in a position where they can really give away too many games like they did last night in Ottawa.
Definitely not, and that was the first time in franchise history that the Sharks had had a 3-goal lead going into the third period and ended up losing. And really, it just can't happen. You're right. This team is right in the middle. They're fighting and clawing for every point that they could possibly get in a very competitive West. That's the kind of game that you've really just got to put your foot down on any team in the NHL. 3-goal lead should be insurmountable in the last 20 minutes. Aaron Dell looked a little shaky last night. He had that one goal that ricocheted in off his stick and kind of through the 7-hole when he was up against the post. That seemed to rattle him. He's been so good. He's, you know, he gets a bit of a pass from me for that bit of an off night from him. But the defense, I thought, the last two games really have been a mixed bag, and that's really been the story of the season, in my opinion.
You know, Zach, we have to ask you, you know, what happened on Thursday night during that game between the Sharks and the Leafs. Of course, the Leafs winning that game in the shootout. The infamous now, you know, beard pulling incident between Nazem Kadri and Joe Thornton. I mean, in your opinion, is this just funny, or, you know, are the Sharks and Thornton, you know, a little bit maybe perturbed with, you know, Kadri and the Leafs, you know, for, you know, taking some of that beard out of Joe Thornton?
You know, when you have that much beard and you're in a bit of a tussle there, you've got to expect something's going to get, you know, grabbed onto. When you're trying to lock up a player, and I was a bit of a pugilist when I played hockey, you know, you're just trying to get inside position, especially against a big guy like Thornton. So it's unfortunate. It's a little bit funny, and you know, there's lots of photos floating around out there, but I certainly don't think there was anything malicious from Kadri there.
You know, Zach, the San Jose Sharks and the San Jose Barracuda are one of the few teams that in the NHL and AHL that play in the same building. Obviously, the Jets and the Moose do, too. We just saw the Barracuda here in Winnipeg recently. They've had it of the Moose's 6 losses. 2 of them have come at the hands of the San Jose Barracuda. They've been very good. How much does the organization like having their AHL team within the same building as them? And how nice was it for the organization to see Captain John McCarthy get the Olympic nod to play for Team USA?
You know, every time you talk to, you know, anyone in the front office, they love having the Barracuda there, where you can be at a game and see Doug Wilson or Joe Will. Some of the scouts will come through. And I know the pro scouts, they can catch an AHL game in San Jose, shoot over to Stockton, come back to San Jose for an NHL game. They're getting quite a bit of work done very easily. And so it's been a great situation for everybody, and especially the young players on the Barracuda. You know, they have access to the Sharks brain trust, the coaching. There's been Mike Ricci, getting the Bakhov Bolter there pretty much day in and day out with the Barracuda and filtering information and knowledge both ways, you know, to the front office, to the players, and helping those that really young Barracuda team learn what it means to be a professional. And John McCarthy, you know, speaking of professional, that's a word that just everyone says when they talk about him. And it's really been a great thing to see this player that spent so much to the organization get a berth on Team USA. And I talked to him extensively, and there's an article up over at The Athletic talking about what that means. And I thought John had a really good quote. You know, he said he can't control who is named to Team USA. All he can do is go out there and work his butt off and represent his country to the best of his ability. And that really sums up John McCarthy to me. He comes out win or loss, you know, talks to the media, takes time for the fans, just an absolute professional. So it's a well-deserved honor for Mr. McCarthy.
Zachary Devine is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Zach covers the San Jose Sharks for theathletic.com in the Bay Area. Zach, you look at the San Jose Sharks and offensively, you know, struggling so far this year. I believe they're 26th in the NHL in goals for with 109. Now, they've compensated for that by being terrific defensively, only giving up 102 goals, which is fourth best in the NHL. In the organization, though, are there concerns that this team might not have enough goal scoring when push comes to shove and you need that critical goal late in the game as you get closer to the playoffs or in the playoffs themselves?
I think the Sharks would definitely look for a scoring winger to kind of slot in those middle six. Timo Meier lately has been playing up with the Joes on the first line and has been doing a really good job. He's got 3 goals, 1 assist in his last 5 games, looking more and more comfortable, more like the player the Sharks were hoping they were getting, you know, when they picked him early in the first round. So perhaps they finally have figured out that left wing on the first line. Hurdle and Logan Couture have been a great unit on that second line. I've always seen Hurdle more as a winger, but again, getting, you know, you got a question mark there on the wing that's been a bit of a rotation. So if it really came to it, I think the Sharks might make a play for some scoring help on the wing. And the fourth line has been a bit of a rotating cast this season. They just can't seem to find that center that they like there. They've been chipping in here and there, that as any fourth line will, right? They'll get hot, they'll get cold, but consistency is something you'd hope to get there at the bottom of the lineup. So if there's an opportunity to cement that 4C spot, I think Doug Wilson will definitely take a look there and see what's available.
Zach, I remember last time we had you on, we asked you about Brent Burns, who was struggling to score. He had no goals in his first 20 games, and now he's got 7 goals on the season, 7 goals in his last 19 games, including a goal last night. Is Brent Burns overcoming that early season struggle and getting back to that Norris Trophy form of last year?
It certainly looks like it offensively. Defensively, he's been paired with Brendan Dillon, and they've had some hiccups, but as Peter DeBoer said to my colleague Kevin Kurz, you know, he'll deal with the hiccups in Brent Burns' game defensively, because what he offers offensively is just so important to the squad. And we've really seen it. The Sharks' offense has come alive since Brent Burns has. And he's shot right back up there. He's tied with Logan Couture for the team lead in points. A minus 16, you don't want to be minus 16 in anything in life, right? But the offense that he's creating, especially of late, and especially on the power play, the Sharks' power play since December 6th is clipping better than 30%. And a lot of that is because Brent Burns has got his feet moving, got those lanes open, and the offense that we saw him creating during his Norris Trophy year is coming back around to him.
No, Zach, we're not seeing the Sharks, as you touched on, they're not scoring a lot. They're not also giving up a lot. And a lot of that, it looks like, is their special teams play. I mean, they're the top 6 team in power play percentage and they're top 3 in penalty kill. Is that contributed a lot to why they've been able to stay in the mix within the Pacific?
I think so. And more and more you're gonna hear about, we saw for the first time in the Sharks' bottom 6 with the defense, Tim Heat and Joakim Ryan, who were a top pairing in the AHL last year. I think that's going to go a long ways to helping that offense, especially on the bottom pairs, generate a bit more. They're good. Both of them are a pair of good puck movers that you need to see in today's NHL. But the special teams really has been where they've made their bread and butter. 5-on-5 play is a little concerning, and you'd like to see a bit more. But Martin Jones and Aaron Dell, they've done a good job against with a defense that is a little bit you know, younger now that you're bringing in, you know, the Heeds and the Ryan. You still have Paul Martin that, for whatever reason, just has not been able to crack that lineup since returning from that ankle injury. Had a brief rehab spell with the Barracuda where he was moving around pretty well, but looked like he was still getting through some of that rehab as he was playing. So I think the Sharks have enough there defensively to keep up the play, both on the penalty kill and have the offensive firepower to help the power play with Heed on the second unit and Burns on the first.
Last question for you, Zach. Always appreciate your time. Defenseman Paul Martin, close to being back into the Sharks lineup. What's his latest status?
You know, that's a great question. I'm sure there's a lot of people, including Paul Martin, that would like to know. all indications are that he's healthy. He's just waiting for his spot. Peter DeBoer is a big fan of the left-right combination, and Joachim Ryan has just played exceedingly well in his rookie season in the NHL, and it's tough to pull out a real cerebral, puck-moving defender that skates, let's face it, better than an older Paul Martin. I don't think that they're going to try to waive him. It would not surprise me if they're trying to shop a defenseman, make some room there. Carrying eight defenders is not ideal. But at the same time, if you've got somebody with the experience, the know-how of a Paul Martin that's just waiting there in the wings in case of an injury or something happening, that is not a bad place to be if you're a head coach or general manager of a team in the NHL.
You know, Zach, we lied. I have one more final question for you here. You just mentioned Pete DeBoer, and considering that Joe Thornton's a pending UFA and Joel Ward's a pending UFA, and this isn't the youngest team, how much pressure is there on Pete DeBoer to get this team into the playoffs, or is that just an obvious question?
You know, Doug Wilson is a patient guy. I think that everyone understands where this team is at, where they're looking towards the future. I still think that they can be competitive. They can get into the playoffs. I'm not sure how much noise they can make. But at the same time, the recovery of Joe Thornton from that knee injury has been miraculous. So does he have one more real big kick at the can down the stretch, knowing that this might be his final season? Who knows what he's thinking as far as retirement? That could be a real inspiration to Joe Thornton to bring his game to another level. I think they'll certainly have the goaltending and the defensive depth that you really need to make a late push. But that offense is a little bit scary, 5-on-5, to see what they can do when the game gets a little bit tighter and the NHL rule book fits on a napkin. You know, they're not going to be able to get the power play chances in the postseason that they're enjoying now.
Zachary Devine covers the San Jose Sharks for TheAthletic.com in the Bay Area. The Sharks into Winnipeg to play the Jets tomorrow afternoon. Zach, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll do it again soon. Let's take care. When we come back, much more on the Jets and the Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And the crowd rises here at SAP Center. They've enjoyed this one. And Wheeler will let time expire. The Sharks win it 4-0 over the Winnipeg Jets. And for Martin Jones, that's his 17th career shutout. 38 saves. That's a career high in a shutout.
The Sharks fans enjoyed it, but the Jets fans didn't. That was back in November, the Jets falling in San Jose by a 4-0 margin. It was at the end of that California road trip that had been successful up until that game in San Jose, where the Sharks were relatively easily able to dispatch the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets look for revenge tomorrow afternoon as the Sharks visit Winnipeg for their only visit into the Peg City tomorrow. Going to be an interesting game between these two teams, between the Jets and the Sharks. Sharks coming off that disappointing effort in Ottawa last night, where they had the game in hand and they just let it slip away with a stellar Ottawa Senators comeback. So you expect a bit of an angry San Jose Sharks team, but the Jets always very competitive on home ice. Let's start from the Jets' perspective. We talked to Mike McIntyre about it back in hour number one. Do you expect to see Jack Roslovic in the lineup tomorrow? Would you make that change given what you've seen from Sean Mathias and Marco Dano so far in the last couple games?
Yeah, it's possible, and you know, that's not a cop-out answer, but I think, you know, you expect Jack Roslovic to get into the lineup here sometime before the Jets have their break, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's simply because you want Jack Roslovic playing. He was the hottest player in the American Hockey League, and, you know, Sean Mathias and Marco Dano, I think they've been okay. I don't think they've been great, but they've obviously been playing limited minutes. So, yeah, I think there is a good chance that Jack Roslovic plays tomorrow versus the Sharks. And if it isn't tomorrow, it's going to be probably on this upcoming road trip. And, you know, I think he deserves to play in the NHL. I think what he's done in the American Hockey League is really impressive. And I think, you know, Dave, if you talk to, you know, anybody that's close to the Winnipeg Jets, they would probably say that the plan was to have Roslovic in the American Hockey League for much of the season. But when you have your number one center go out, you know, for 6 to 8 weeks, and with the way Roslovic has been playing in the American Hockey League, I think you would agree that he's ready. So, I mean, it's possible. And, you know, when you talk about the Sharks team, you know, they've lost their last two games in overtime or the shootout. And, you know, right now the Sharks are trailed by, pardon me, the Ducks trail the Sharks only by 1 point with three games in hand. So
the Sharks have three games in hand.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah. Sorry, the Sharks have three games in hand. And this isn't a familiar territory for the Sharks. I mean, the Sharks are used to being, you know, at the top of the Pacific Division, but with the Vegas Golden Knights having, you know, this incredible first year in the National Hockey League, and with the LA Kings having a, you know, a renaissance season, I mean, the Sharks and Ducks, they're going to be fighting for that last playoff spot in the Pacific Division, right? Because, you know, three teams at the very least make it from the Pacific. So, I mean, this is a big game for the Sharks, a much bigger game for the Sharks than the Jets. But having said that, I mean, the Jets lost to the Avalanche in overtime. That wasn't their best game, even though I think the Jets could have easily won that game. And then when you're talking about last night's game, you know, the Jets get the clean 2 points, but they could have played better. So I think, you know, it's going to be a much better game, you know, from most teams. But, you know, back to Roslovic, you got to get him into the lineup, don't you, Dave?
I think so. And I think the fact is that when he was originally brought up, when Mark Scheifele went down, the statement from Paul Maurice was that they've got NHL players that can go into the lineup. And, you know, of course, you put Sean Mathias in, he scores. You put Marco Dano in, he scores. But then subsequent to that, as Drew touched on earlier in the show, their minutes have been more limited. So, you know, and how are you going to have success if you have those limited minutes? Because clearly the coaching staff, now, of course, circumstantial as well, because there was a lot of special teams play, and those guys aren't going to be on the ice for special teams.
Well, Sean Mathias got a lot of penalty kill time last night.
But I'm just saying that overall, though, generally, like Marco Dano is not going to get a lot of penalty.
He's getting 5-on-5 play only.
Right, exactly. So overall, those aren't your go-to guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So would you be better served having a Jack Roslovic? Like, I mean, again, we've seen what he's done at the AHL level. I think his talent is definitely, he's definitely NHL ready. I don't know that, like, again, I'm all for seasoning, so I don't know that it would have been a bad thing for him to remain in the American Hockey League and really go in one of the top players in the American Hockey League and then go into the NHL next year. The reality is, I think he was probably ready for the jump anyways. And I just, my thought process is, though, is that if you're going to, the coaching staff has talked about it, if you're putting a guy in, you know, you're not replacing apples with apples and apples to oranges. So, you want Jack Roslovic to go in. You don't want to be on a, quote, checking line. You know, you're not putting him in onto that fourth line to be a checking center, a winger. Now, of course, at the same time, you're saying, well, maybe that fourth line will give you more offense with Jack Roslovic in there. But again, how much are you going to see from Jack Roslovic if he only plays 7 minutes in a game or 8 minutes in a game? So it's a bit of a conundrum for the team because, again, for him to have success, similar to what a Kyle Connor is able to do, you really want to put him into a circumstance that allows him to do that. Now, right now, the Jets don't necessarily have that, because they're not really looking like they're going to want to mix up that third line. Mm-hmm. So really, you're only going to put Jack Roslovic on the fourth line. To me, that's not really a way to give him that opportunity, other than just letting him get into the NHL and get his feet wet. If that's your goal, that's fine. But at the same time, I just don't know that you're not. Let's put it this way: don't expect Jack Roslovic to go in and play limited minutes and rip up the NHL. So you give him the opportunity on a second line or a third line, specifically a third line would probably be ideal to start. That's a different story. But again, right now, it probably that hole doesn't look like it's there. So I don't think that you're going to necessarily see Jack Roslovic right away.
I agree with you, Dave. You know, ideally, you would like to see Roslovic in the American Hockey League, but he's up with the Jets now.
Right.
So wouldn't you rather see him play 7 or 8 minutes than, you know, ride the press box or sit in the press box for 3 weeks?
Absolutely. I just think it's kind of what the Jets' mantra has been, right? That they, when they call up a guy, they're not going to necessarily call him up so he can play in a role that he's not really familiar with. Like, you know, your Jack Roslovic in the AHL plays on the first line, whether it's at center or at wing, and he plays penalty kill, he plays power play, he plays all situation. You know, he's the number one player on that Moose squad, both, you know, from almost all perspectives, really. I mean, obviously the goaltending, the defense has been very important. But so Jack Roslovic, to me, again, has done everything he could do, and he's excelled in the AHL. So I'm not saying I agree with you, Ezzy, and I think it's better for him. Like, it's important to get the practice, and that was, I think, what Coach Maurice wanted him to do, was come in, practice with the big club, see how his habits are, see that it meshes well. But again, like, and now that he's had a few, you know, like a week or so of whatever it is of being with the big club, he's kind of feels more comfortable inserting him into the lineup. Again, like I said, it's just a function of getting him that opportunity. So I think it's important to play rather than watching and practicing. But and again, that to me is a function of why do you call him up then? Right? Do you call him up to just sit? Because let's be realistic. You called him up. Mark Scheifele's out for 6 to 8 weeks. You got Brandon Tanev coming back. So Brandon Tanev's going to go back in the lineup because Paul Maurice likes that, him on the third line. So what are you doing with Jack Roslovic? Is he just going to sit there for the next few weeks? Or are you going to put him on the fourth line playing?
I think he has to get into a game.
Well, yeah. I think, you know, let's assume Tanev is back after the Jets bye week. So you have 4 games before the Jets bye week starts. You have tomorrow, get home to San Jose. You got Tuesday in Buffalo. And then you got the back-to-back against Chicago and Minnesota Friday,
Saturday. He has
Saturday.
To get into one of these games. I don't care if it's tomorrow or against Buffalo or against the back-to-back games against Chicago or Minnesota. He's got to get into one of these games.
I agree. I think you see him for the next 4 games. That's what I mean, assuming he's not complete fish out of water, and I don't expect that he would be, I think he gets his first taste of extended NHL action by playing in these next 4 games, and then the bye week happens, which is a clean break because you're going to send him back to the Moose anyways during that bye week because, you know, why not? And then at that point in time, you'd expect Tanev would be back healthy for the Jets, or Scheifele would be close to being back. So I think this is Jack Roslovic, I mean, for lack of a better word, his audition. You haven't seen enough from Mark Odano. Sean Mathias has given you some on the penalty kill. That
I don't even think this is an audition. I mean, we know Roslovic is going to be a full-time NHLer very soon.
But I'm saying this is his first extended opportunity. Audition's not the right word, because you know he's going to be an NHL player, you know, sooner rather than later.
And there's a good chance he plays wing, by the way.
I would expect he would start
on
the wing. And that was why back when the Moose had him playing wing earlier on in the year, remember we were talking about that on the show, how interesting we found that as he was beginning to maybe learn that side of the game as well as from being straight up the middle at center where there might not necessarily be a spot for him on the Winnipeg Jets.
And Dave, I appreciate everything you're saying, but they've called him up, right? There's no turning back.
Yep.
Right? So he's with the Jets. So you can't go back to, you know, spending the whole year with the Moose. They've called him up.
Yeah.
And he could have been playing last night for the Moose, right?
Yeah.
And for me, when you have a guy that was red hot, right? Like, we're talking, Dave knows this better than anybody. He goes to all the Moose games. I mean, Roslovic has been ripping up the AHL.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, he should be in the lineup. And whether that's on the fourth line or the third line, I think he's got to play.
I agree with you. Even if it's only 8 or 10 minutes, that's not the... I mean, he doesn't have any expectation that he's going to come in and play 18 minutes and be your first or second line center. I mean, there'd be no reason why he would logically think that way. But get him into the lineup. Get him in for 10 minutes. Get him in for however many minutes the game allows him to play. And just see what you got, because he's earned it with his play at the AHL level. And all due respect to Mark Odano, it was nice that he got that goal when he came back in on his first shift, but he hasn't done anything since then that would indicate that Roslovic needs to be up in the press box and Dano needs to be on the ice.
Right, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but when the Jets have this week-long break, Roslovic will be sent down to the AHL.
Yeah, no, I would expect
him
to.
And he'll play. He's not going to just, you know, sit there and take a break. I mean, he'll go back playing for the Moose.
I would imagine they'd probably send him and Pullman back to give them the opportunity because, you know, Tucker Pullman's another player who's sitting kind of in the press box. And we know that Tobias Enstrom is coming back potentially tomorrow, maybe not till the road trip. So you've got Tobias Enstrom coming back, which means Ben Sherrod is going to go into the press box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's a situation where you've got these young players. Again, it's not a bad problem to have from an organizational standpoint, because you have these guys knocking on the door at all times. And we haven't even talked about Nick Petan, Brendan Lemieux, Chase, like all these young players who are with the Moose who really are kind of, like I said, kind of knocking on. Jack Roslovic is an example of a guy who's kicked down the door, in my opinion, to get that opportunity with the NHL. So But again, it becomes a conundrum. You've got a winning formula right now. You've got a team that's winning. Don't get me wrong. I'm all for giving him that opportunity. I just think like there's such a difference between playing, you know, let's again situationally. Yeah. If he only gets into 4 minutes in a game versus a guy who's playing, you know, 20 plus minutes in all situations in the AHL. So
yeah, but as
he said, the Pandora's box has already been opened. He's already up with the team. So if that's the case, you're not going to send him back down at this point. Get him up there and get him into some games.
And
the truth is also, if his play dictates it, he'll be given more time.
Absolutely.
The reality is, if he's doing so well with the Jets on the fourth line, let's say, and Joel Armia is not doing what he needs to be doing, or Andrew Kopp isn't doing what he needs to be doing, then the reality is, then Jack Roslovic can supplant these guys and take their roles. I mean, and that's kind of what this is all about, is earning your opportunities. So I'm not saying that Jack Roslovic is necessarily deserves to be on in the top two lines, top three lines. I think he does, but I think he'll earn that. And so, sure, maybe make it, you know, like give him this, as you called it, Drew, like an extended, what do you call it, an extended
four-game showcase.
Showcase, sure, whatever it is. And give him that opportunity. And again, like I said, he's the kind of player who I think will take it and run with it.
The Pittsburgh Penguins continue to struggle in the Eastern Conference, not in a playoff spot, which is hard to believe for the back-to-back Stanley Cup champion. Sam Werner of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette joins us next to talk about the struggles of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Just a quick note about the Jets. They're going to be on the ice practicing at Bell MTS Place at 12 noon. So keep it tuned to IllegalCurve.com for all the latest from the Jets practice. We were talking about Roslovic. Maybe he gets in. You'll see more as the Jets hit the practice ice. Pardon me? Tobias Enstrom, of course, as well. So keep it tuned to IllegalCurve.com around 12 noon, 12:30. You'll see more about from what's happening at Jets practice. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve and, of course, our website with the latest Jets and Moose news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sam Werner joins us. Sam, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad I could join you guys.
Our pleasure as always, Sam. You know, with the Pittsburgh Penguins, victors last night, 4-0 over the New York Islanders. The previous night, 4-0 defeat at the hands of the Carolina Hurricanes. And the game before that, a handy victory over the Philadelphia Flyers. Is this the inconsistency that's just driving the Pittsburgh Penguins management absolutely nuts so far this season?
Yeah, I think it has to be because, you know, if you look at the game last night, the game against Philadelphia a couple of nights ago, and even their two shootout wins against the Blue Jackets in late December, in those games you saw flashes of this team that won back-to-back Stanley Cups. Last night's game, for instance, Sidney Crosby was Sidney Crosby again. He looked dominant, but just their inability to string wins together and make up some ground that they've lost here in the standings has really been pretty frustrating. And I think it's sort of, confused some people as to, okay, what kind of team is this we're looking at? Are we looking at the team that beat the Islanders last night and put together a comprehensive win against the Flyers before that? Or is it the team that looked really listless in the loss to Carolina earlier this week? And so I think, you know, you look at the game against the Islanders last night, and that's certainly an encouraging sign. But unless they go out against Boston and look great again, I think it's sort of you have to put the brakes on any sort of real grounded optimism moving forward.
You know, Sam, Daniel Sprong entered last night's game with two career points. Last night he erupted for two goals and an assist against the Islanders. Is it possible that Sprong has made this team on a full-time basis now midway through the year?
Yeah, I would be surprised if he's not on the team the rest of the year, unless he goes through some sort of really prolonged stretch. I think especially what sort of leads me to say he's going to stay is that he put up all those numbers playing with Sidney Crosby last night, and I think that's what I know fans have sort of been waiting for a while, is to call Daniel Sprong up and put him on Sidney Crosby's right wing and just sort of let him go to work. And it's a bit of an odd mix because Sprong is sort of more of a Phil Kessel type player and that he likes to set up and get a shot. And Crosby tends to like guys like Connor Sheary and Jake Guentzel a little bit more, guys that sort of get into the dirty areas, into the corners, and can play, play more straight ahead games in tight spaces. But, you look at what happened last night, and I think you'd be sort of crazy to mix up anything that was going on with that top line. So I think we'll see Dominic Simone, Sidney Crosby, and Daniel Sprong together for at least the next couple of games based on last night.
Sam, most people would agree that this is Matt Murray's team. You know, he's the goaltender of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but Tristan Jarry sure seems to be making noise in net for the Penguins. What have you thought about his play so far in the backup role?
Yeah, he's been great so far. I think I even had the thought last night of, maybe you give Matt Murray a little bit more time off moving forward and ride this hot streak with Tristan Jarry for as long as you can, because the Penguins aren't really in a position right now where they can afford to sort of sit back. And Murray has been, I would say, okay, not great for most of this year. His numbers are certainly below where they've been for most of his career. And so, he's the guy. He's the guy in net. If they make the playoffs this year, he's going to be the guy in the playoffs. But I don't think it's that controversial an opinion right now to say that Tristan Jarry is playing better in net than Matt Murray right now. And when you're in a position where every point matters, maybe you think about going to him a little bit more. Mike Sullivan doesn't really like to rotate his goalies too much, but I sort of wonder if that's something he's got to think about here moving forward here.
Sam Werner is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sam covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Sam, we've heard the Penguins bandied about in trade rumors for, it seems like, 3 months at this point in time. We know that Jim Rutherford's not afraid to make a deal when necessary. How realistic is a trade? What are they looking to upgrade? We know that, the bottom six has sort of been a wasteland of goal scoring for the Penguins. Is that the area that Jim Rutherford is focusing on?
Yeah, I still think adding a quality third-line center is the top thing on his shopping list right now, because you look at the last couple of games, and what they've done is they've moved Riley Sheahan down to the fourth line, and that fourth line has been really good, him with Tom Kunackle and Ryan Reeves. That's been one of their better lines these last couple of weeks. And that sort of shows something that I've heard within the organization for a while now, that Riley Sheahan, if he's your fourth-line center, that's great. That's a great place to be if you're the Penguins with Riley Sheahan, your fourth-line center. If he's your third-line center, maybe not so much. But the problem right now is they don't really have a natural third-line center to fill that spot. They've been going with Jake Guentzel here recently, but I know they'd rather move him back to the wing. I think that's where they see him long-term. So I think adding a third-line center that can add some scoring punch is tops on the list. The problem, though, is there's not a ton of those guys available, and the Penguins aren't exactly overloaded with trade chips that they're willing to part with. I'm sure if they could get Carl Hagelin's salary off the books, they'd love that, but Hagelin hasn't exactly made himself a desirable trade asset so far this year. Same goes for Connor Sherry. I think he's sort of a slightly more desirable asset than Hagelin, but he's also been going through a little bit of a slump. So I think they're still trying to figure out what makes the most sense, what works in terms of what they can live with getting rid of and still maximizing their return. So I'd expect to see a deal here at some point over the next month. Rutherford typically likes to make his moves a little bit earlier before the trade deadline to sort of give guys time to settle in. So I think these next couple of weeks, they're off on the bye week next week, but these next couple of weeks are going to be critical as far as what the roster looks like heading into the spring.
Sam, how has Jamie Oleksiak fit into that decor? I know he recently scored his first goal as a member of the Pens.
Yeah, he was really good in their game against the Flyers the other night. I think he's starting to find his role a little bit more. I think it's sort of interesting to see what happens with him once they get everyone healthy. Brian Dumoulin, they placed Frank Corrado on waivers today, which sort of tells me that Brian Dumoulin's probably ready to come back from a concussion. So Chad Roweedle's still out with an injury. So it'll be interesting if and when they get a full healthy decor, if they see Oleksiak as one of the top six or maybe the seventh guy. I do think, and I thought this when they acquired him, that his acquisition probably frees them up to trade Ian Cole, which is something that they've sort of been talking about for a while now. He sort of brings that element of toughness and physicality that Cole's brought the last couple of years. So I think overall he's fitting in well. He's not the greatest skater in the world. He's not the most mobile guy on their back line, but he hasn't looked totally lost at times. And like against Philly, I think he looked pretty strong.
Now, Sam, it's a good problem to have, but how drained is this team overall from having gone in two Stanley Cup championship runs? And is that, do you feel that is impacting this team right now as they quest for their third in a row?
Yeah, I think it's impossible for it not to. These guys have played so much hockey over the last 2 years, especially when, it's only a couple more games, but you factor in all the guys who played in the World Cup last September, too. That's even more competitive hockey on their legs. And so I think just as much, it's a sort of mental fatigue. You know, I know last year Sidney Crosby came in with sort of a single-minded focus of, okay, we're going to be the first team to go back-to-back. That we're going to accomplish that. And I think this year it's I don't want to say it's harder for them to get up for games, but you know, they accomplished a pretty significant goal last year of going back-to-back and being the first salary cap team to do that. And, you know, for as much as they'd like to win three in a row, it's not quite the same drive or motivation, I think, that got them through last year and allowed them to sort of be the last man standing last year. So I think there is an element of fatigue, both physical and mental. And, you know, we'll see. Talking to Crosby the other day, he sort of said, if you're a good team, you're able to get yourselves up in the second half of the season and push through some of that, both physical and mental fatigue. And so I think they're pretty optimistic that they'll be able to push through that, you know, once the games start ratcheting up a little bit more and there's a little bit more standings and game pressure on them on a night-to-night basis. But we'll see what happens over the next couple months here.
Sam, Justin Schultz obviously had a breakthrough season last year, having a career regular season, but he was also excellent during the playoffs, especially with Chris Letang out of the lineup. How has he looked since coming back from an injury?
He's been good. I think he's been battling through a couple of different injuries this year. And so I think it's sort of been tough for him to really get his legs in the game and really get into a rhythm on the ice. They've had him back with Ian Cole these last couple games, and so I think it'll be interesting to see what happens if they trade Ian Cole and sort of where they fit Schultz on the blue line there, because him and Cole have sort of been regular partners really going back to the 2016 Stanley Cup run. And I don't doubt that Justin Schultz is capable of playing with other defensemen, but I think it'll be sort of interesting to see how they utilize him moving forward if they get rid of his regular defense partner. But yeah, overall he's had a pretty solid year. I think you know, the injuries have certainly played a factor, and if he can stay healthy here moving forward for a while, I think he'll be able to sort of settle into a more regular routine.
Sam, last question for you. We appreciate your time as always. Dominic Simon was called up from Scranton Wilkes-Barre. You know, he had some good numbers at the AHL level the last couple of years. How has he looked in his first sort of eight games extended look with the Penguins? Had two assists last night versus the Islanders playing alongside Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was part of that dynamic line with Crosby and Daniel Sprong last night. I think it's been sort of up and down for Dominic Simon these first couple games here. He definitely showed some flashes early that led you to believe he might be a guy that could stick. But, you know, the games after that, I think he sort of, you know, looks like an AHL guy at times. And then last night, obviously, he looks good. So I think they're committed to giving him a long-term shot here, especially for as long as a guy like Brian Rust is out of the lineup, and it seems like Rust will be out for quite a while. So we'll see what happens with the roster shakeups moving forward. But, you know, I wouldn't put Simone's entrance to, like, what Jake Guentzel did last year or even, you know, what Connor Sherry brought when he came up from Wilkes-Barre 2 years ago. But I think he's been a welcome addition, and he seems to play well with Sidney Crosby. He, you know, Crosby tends to play well with these young guys who play a simple game and, you know, don't try to overcook things on the ice. And that was certainly true last night in the game against the Islanders. So, yeah, I'd say sort of a mixed bag, but I think it's certainly worth keeping him up and maybe taking a longer look at him over these next couple weeks.
Sam, does this team end up getting into the playoffs?
If you put a gun to my head right now, I say yes, but I think it's going to be harder than a lot of people in Pittsburgh. I think the attitude in Pittsburgh is they'll figure it out and be fine right now, I think. And I think that it's going to be a pretty uphill climb the rest of the way, but I think they're ultimately going to sneak in as a wild card.
By the way, Sam, we would never put a gun to your head.
That's why I like you guys.
Sam Werner covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Sam, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, anytime.
Take care, Sam.
Cheers, Sam.
When we come back, awards season doesn't actually begin tomorrow night with the Golden Globes. It begins tonight. We'll tell you why after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests who joined us earlier on the program. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, or just subscribe and get it sent to your device each and every week. This final segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. It's a new year, but the same terrific lineup of comedians that you've come to expect from Rumors are going to be appearing. You can check out their website, rumorscomedyclub.com. Be sure to get your tickets quickly, because they always go fast when you're talking about comedy at rumorscomedyclub.com. Ezzy, tonight, big night for you, big night.
Huge night.
Big night for your name. It is the 8th annual, 9th annual? What year are we at now?
No, not quite.
7th annual?
6th.
6th annual Ezzy Awards.
Yeah, the first Ezzys were during the lockout.
Okay.
At the Chill, if I recall correctly.
Was that the first ones?
No, the first Ezzys were actually in my house.
Oh,
yes,
that's right.
The first Ezzys were just the brain of a demented genius coming on a Saturday night who was
by himself.
It was
actually just me walking around Osborne Village.
Yeah, I forgot. The evolution of the Ezzys was Ezzy wearing a tuxedo t-shirt that he bought at Grand Park Mall with me. And speaking into a microphone, and somehow it expanded.
Dave, you'd think we've come a long way, but we haven't.
No.
No, you still have the same t-shirt, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm wearing the same underwear.
There you go. That's delightful. Anyways, the 6th annual Ezzys tonight via Twitter.
Yeah.
Follow, what is it, at the Ezzy Awards?
Yeah, it's just at the Ezzys.
Pardon me, at the Ezzys.
Yeah, we're going to kick it off around 8 o'clock Central.
8 o'clock Central, okay.
Yeah, so it's always a good time, so just log on to Twitter.
Yeah,
you don't have to do anything all night.
If you're on Twitter.com and you want to be participating, tweet at Ezzy. Or the Ezzys.
Yeah, so you have all the nominees and pictures and categories and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I've been...
Drew, you've won already for Worst Host. We're going to
thank you.
We're going to release that right now.
I appreciate that. I got my fingers crossed for, you know, best baby of the year, you know, for my Sam getting born this year. But that's a lot of competition for that award.
There's a Benny Pollock that could...
aware of that, but I'll say this to try and change the judges' minds is, as I was leaving for the radio show this morning, Aaron, my oldest daughter, my oldest child, said, "Daddy's going to do the radio show with Uncle Ezzy." So I'm just saying, if he's Uncle Ezzy, I think Sam needs to get some consideration for best baby of the year. Otherwise, there's going to be some troubles.
Yeah, Sam is definitely in the running.
Okay.
And Aaron is definitely in the running for best daughter.
Yes, thank you.
As well. But it's going to be a great time. We always have a good time. We we pop some bevies.
Yeah, there's certainly no shortage of bevies.
Time. And as always, Gary Lawless tunes in. He looks forward to it every year. So now that he's in Vegas, he's not going to be able to attend
in
person.
You have to tweet the time change, Ezzy, so he knows when.
Yeah, it's
2 hours.
6 o'clock Pacific time.
Yeah, so make sure he's ready. I don't know if the Golden Knights play tonight or not, but he should just cancel whatever he had to.
Did you see their big win last night over the Hawks?
I didn't see that. I didn't get to look at the out-of-town scoreboard. The Golden Knights just continue to roll. It's
first
incredible.
First in the West.
Yeah.
You know what's another
incredible
team that continues to roll?
Manitoba Moose.
The Manitoba Moose.
I knew you were going to say that.
1.2 seconds left. Buddy Robinson gets his first career AHL hat trick.
He's our buddy.
He's our buddy, as he would like to say. And this Moose team just doesn't quit. I mean, the Chicago's on an incredible run right now. They've been just phenomenal. And the Moose looked like they were going to be out of it. They were down by two. Buddy Robinson, Coach Vincent pulled Michael Hutchinson with 3:30 left, down by two. The Moose got one goal to narrow it, and then Buddy Robinson in the front of the net, Buddy on the spot, put the puck into the net, tied the game. They lost Timo Polkinen, I think, got the game winner on a slap shot on his off wing, I think. But it was a good game, and the Moose just keep finding ways to win, and they've got four representatives now, right now, selected for the AHL All-Star Game.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if they're all going to go, but Coach Vincent is the coach of the Central. Jack Roslick was selected as a forward. Cam Schilling, who's, again, I wrote about it on a legal curve, he's just been really good for this team, and Michael Hutchinson.
Well, and they could have sent two or three more players, right? I think you could make a strong argument that Mason Appleton could be an All-Star. You could make a strong argument that Buddy Robinson could be an All-Star for the Moose, right? So no shortage of great performances on the Moose this year.
Before we wrap the show in a couple minutes, has any other good stories from your honeymoon? You've mentioned it a few times. You were away on a California adventure for the last week or 10 days. Any other amusing stories that the audience might enjoy that sort of just exemplify what it's like to be Ezra Ginsberg. And
get
to
in
be,
the mind.
To
get
be
in the
married
mind.
To Ezra Ginsberg. I mean, yeah. the what most you, generous guy
in
the world.
You don't want to get in my mind.
Well, the most generous guy in the world that we know, you know, it's something you would give your shirt off your back to any of your friends and to really random people on the street. Did you maybe run into any issues with that while on your California adventure?
Yeah, you had to bring that up, didn't you, Drew?
Well, you told us about it, so there was no doubt we weren't bringing it up.
You know, well, if you've been to San Francisco, and this was my first time in San Francisco, by the way, and it's a beautiful city. It's one of the greatest cities in the U.S. for sure, and all of North America. And, you know, unfortunately, they do have a homeless problem.
Yes.
In San Francisco. And the area that we were staying, if you're familiar with San Fran, we were staying in the Tenderloin District.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are, unfortunately, as I mentioned, you know, a lot of people, you know, that aren't as fortunate as us. And, you know, they ask for change and everything like that. So I always made sure that I had change in my pocket.
Yes, the generosity that you're known for.
Yeah. So one day, you know, we're walking around, you know, Union Square, which is very close to the Tenderloin District, a couple blocks away. And, you know, there was a man that was sitting outside of a department store, and I went up to him and handed him, you know, I don't know what it was, 30, 40 cents. And he said, "Thanks, sir, but I'm not homeless." So, you know, I was a little bit embarrassed by that. You know, aside from that, we had a great time. We saw some stand-up comedy on New Year's Eve at the Shelton Theater. You know, ate a lot of good food. We went up to Sausalito.
Yeah,
you know, we checked
place.
Out the Museum of Modern Art, the Jewish Contemporary Museum.
Uh-huh.
It was a great time. Unfortunate for that one little hiccup.
Well, what about the other hiccup where my understanding is you actually bowled over a young child and made them cry?
Oh, well, okay, in my defense, no, he, well, you know, I was exaggerating a little. He wasn't crying. He just went to hug his dad. So
I see.
I'm not sure if he was actually crying, but, you know, there's a lot
slightly traumatized.
There's a lot of uphill walking, as you know, in San Francisco.
And you don't do well on uphills.
Well, what ended up happening is I didn't see the kid, and Naomi and I were holding hands, and he kind of came out of nowhere because he was following his dad, and I ended up tripping over his little bag that he was pulling from behind us, and in the process, he actually got knocked over, and I actually went forward into a garbage bin. So it was it was unfortunate, but I made sure to apologize. And
you gave him 40 cents in change as well.
Nobody was hurt.
That's it for the Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I don't think we can beat that. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support those fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thank you to all of our guests who joined us, Zachary Devine of the Athletic Bay Area, Sam Werner of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Marty B. Ron. We were joined by Mike McIntyre and Chris Peters. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on LegalCurve.com. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, doing a great job. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.